apart. We know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Hi, this is Kenny Kramer, the real Kramer, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA. And as Cosmo would say, giddy up.
W.S. Graves, crashing into me. G. Sansbury, and Coconut Counties. X marks the spot of the dial to me. Creating a new connection, WGXC.
Turnout on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the WGXC Catskill Studio to learn about Wave Farm's WGXC, tour the studio, record a station ID or PSA, or pick up a sticker. The WGXC Catskill Studio is located at 393 Main Street in Catskill. Come on by for a visit and see how you can get involved in your local community radio station.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Karen Werner of Bergen, Norway. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, July 4th. Local early morning temperatures range from 52 degrees in Steventown to 57 in Scoterhook. Regional average soil temperature is 71 degrees. Air quality will be moderate. Today will be nice. A high of 79 happens at 4 p.m. Dew points will be in the 50s, and the skies will be sunny. Overnight, open up those windows. Temperatures fall to 57 degrees. Tomorrow, the dew point increases, turning the afternoon a bit humid. We get a high of 83 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 65 degrees. Then, Sunday, we'll have a high of 90 at 4 p.m. Sunny, with dew points in the upper 60s, making it feel pretty sticky. Monday, we get a high of 92 and rain in the afternoon. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:19 a.m., high tide at 10:43 a.m., low tide again at 5:24 p.m., then high tide once again at 11:21 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 78 degrees, and the tide strength is average. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:21 a.m. Looking way up, we see our new visitor is confirmed to be an extrasolar comet with an eccentricity greater than 6. Aliens might be getting interested in us. I wonder why. X-class flare chances are at 1%. Plasma winds will be slow at 368 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently solar max standard with an S2 level noise floor. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 118. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July 4th, 2025. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
The Congressional Budget Reconciliation Bill passed the House of Representatives by a 218 to 214 vote. Only two Republicans joined Democrats in voting against the bill. Proponents cheer the bill as the cornerstone of President Donald Trump's agenda to cut waste, fraud, and abuse from federal spending. But critics call the bill harmful, noting it slashes funding for social safety net programs like Medicaid and SNAP, and now heads to the president's desk for his signature or veto. Healthcare advocates say rural patients will have even fewer options due to provisions within the federal budget plan. Catherine Carley has more.
In addition to significant cuts to Medicaid, providers that offer abortion care would be prohibited from accepting Medicaid payments for any other family planning or reproductive care services. Kayla Montgomery with Planned Parenthood of Northern New England says the restriction could close nearly 200 health centers in rural and medically underserved areas.
We're talking about cancer screenings, STI testing and treatment, birth control. It pushes those services further out of reach for millions.
More than half of the 2 million patients nationwide who rely on Planned Parenthood have Medicaid insurance, which is already prohibited from paying for almost all abortions. Backers of the Senate's budget plan say it's needed to trim federal spending, but efforts to defund Planned Parenthood have been decades in the making.
With the 4th of July holiday weekend here, North Dakotans might be out at parades, fireworks shows, and barbecues. But new polling indicates many Americans are struggling to feel good about the state of the country. Mike Moen has that story.
A new Gallup survey shows 58% of U.S. adults say they're proud to be an American. While there are some partisan splits, the overall percentage is a record low for the annual poll question. Barbara Hedrick with the League of Women Voters in North Dakota says it's not surprising given the sharp divides between the two major parties, but she feels there's something else at play.
There is still an after effect, I believe, from the pandemic, from that separation from each other that we had.
Hedrick says the pandemic was so politicized is another complicating factor that prevented the country from healing. She says it's understandable some Americans are very concerned about various rights being taken away. However, she notes the U.S. has deep flaws throughout its history, and there's still many more rights afforded today than in past decades.
While many in Alabama may be looking forward to a weekend of fireworks, Montgomery Fire Rescue is reminding residents using them inside that city's limits is against the law.
Captain Tavon Ping Pon says possession, sale, or use of any fireworks is illegal in Montgomery and could lead to fines. He encourages families to enjoy the city's public celebration instead of putting themselves and their neighbors at risk.
First and foremost, it's illegal to use fireworks, possess, or even sell within the city limits. Anything to do with fireworks should be off limits, and it should be left to a trained professional.
Montgomery will host a free public fireworks display at the Riverfront Amphitheater starting at 8 p.m. Shantia Hudson reporting.
This is Public News Service. With Donald Trump in the White House, Illinois and the nation face new challenges about who belongs in the United States. Nationality has become a flashpoint, and studies show folks tend to have an implicit bias about who fits the bill for being American. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Experts say many associate the term American with white people who speak English, even if they initially say otherwise. University of Chicago psychology professor Katherine Kinsler explains people don't always consciously exclude individuals from being American and can be vocal about how ridiculous the notion of being white to be American sounds.
And yet those same people, when given a more subtle task of what they think of when they think of what it means to be American, they might just be a little bit faster to identify somebody who's white and who's speaks English as being American versus somebody else.
She says humans categorize others using cognitive shortcuts, which can cause prejudice and stereotypes and lead to real-world consequences like determining hiring decisions and ultimately making individuals feel like they don't belong.
President Donald Trump's budget bill would end some tax credits one Kansas manufacturer says are vital to American competitiveness abroad. More from Zimon Perez.
Kurt Nikens runs a company that manufactures electric yard hostlers, chargers, and battery storage systems in Kansas City. He explains his industrial customers use the $40,000 tax credit to help purchase his all-electric yard hostlers for loading and unloading cargo. Senate Republicans voted to cut that tax credit by September. Nikens says EV manufacturers and renewable energy companies in general frequently compete with Chinese manufacturers, who are subsidized by their government.
If we don't support clean energy from materials to manufacturing to assembly, even clean energy products all the way up to vehicles in this bill, then we are really handing dominance to China for all of that.
Policies like the EV tax credits from President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act have been in the Trump administration's crosshairs. Republican lawmakers have argued that market competition should be the driving force on which vehicles, electric or gas, people drive.
A federal judge has ruled in favor of Appalachian Mountain Advocates and the Center for Biological Diversity, allowing portions of the Monongahela National Forest to be protected from mining activities by South Fork Coal Company. The court ruled the company's bankruptcy proceedings weren't enough to pause the lawsuit.
Attorney Andrew Young with Allegheny Blue Ridge Alliance says the Federal Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement will ultimately decide if coal hauling will be allowed to resume.
The agency will issue a decision on those valid existing rights, determining whether or not this surface mining company has a valid right to conduct these operations in the forest.
The U.S. Forest Service is also named in the suit. Plaintiffs say allowing coal trucks and heavy equipment into the forest violates the Endangered Species Act. The court's decision allows both the lawsuit against the Forest Service and the ongoing administrative appeals within the Department of the Interior to proceed while the coal company remains in bankruptcy. Nadia Rumlagan reporting.
I'm Edwin JVR for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to the WGXC Afternoon Show. I'm Lucy, your first Friday host. I'll be live in the Catskill studio here at 393 Main Street. So wander by if you're around and give us a wave. Joining me today in the studio is somebody I've known my entire life, Mr. Bruce Bonesack. Welcome to the show. We were having a little issue with the headphones there for a second, give me a second here. Can you hear yourself?
I can.
You can. Okay. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. So, Dad. This is my dad.
Well, thank you, Lucy. Thank you for having me on your program. I really appreciate it and have an opportunity to share the Howard Gibson Photo Library and talk about the site Photo by Gibson. Much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Well, I greatly appreciate having you here because I actually was supposed to have another guest on the show and they bailed and I was in a bind and I said, who can I have on my show on the 4th of July at the last minute? I know someone who can't say no to me.
And here I am.
And here you are. So today we want to talk about, as you mentioned, you run a website, a photo archive from a photographer, a local photographer named Howie Gibson, Howard Gibson.
Correct.
They went by Howie.
Yep.
You purchased his negatives in
1978. I knew both his sons. Donald, his younger son, was in my class in school at Germantown. So I knew them very well. And when Howard died in 1978, I knew he had an extensive library because Howard was the town photographer and the county photographer for my entire life, having grown up in Germantown. And I knew that it was an asset that should stay in town and be shared with the community and others outside of the community. So went and talked to his sons after his death and shared with them the fact that I wanted to purchase the entire photo library, wanted to keep it in town, wanted to keep it intact, didn't want it to be parsed out to anyone else. And they thought that that's exactly what Howard would have wanted. And we came to an agreement, and I purchased the entire library, which is mostly negatives, some photos, but an extensive library of negatives, tens of thousands of negatives. Howard worked in Germantown from 1947 until his death in 1978. Before that, he was a photographer in Belrose, Long Island, where he worked and commercially from 1936 to 19 till he moved to Germantown.
Do you have any idea why he moved upstate?
You know, I don't. It might have, he had some neighbors that he knew very well, and I think they were relatives, so it might have been through a family relationship.
It's always interesting to me to how people end up here.
Yeah.
So let's actually go back for a second, because I want to bring you back into it to kind of show your connection to the area and why it is that this was an important thing for you to keep. So you ended up, I mean, you were born in the area, but the reason your family ended up here is very interesting. So your grandfather put your father, my grandfather, and your uncle and your aunt in a car in South Dakota
in 1928.
And drove to upstate New York.
Yeah, he was in the telephone business in Minnesota.
Was he in the telephone business, though? Oh, I thought he just saw an ad and was like, let's do that.
No, he owned two telephone companies, small telephone companies in Minnesota. He came originally from North Dakota off a big ranch and owned the two telephone companies in Minnesota. From what I understand, my grandmother hated the winters so bad in Minnesota that she forced his hand to move to the east. And
it was an ad, right, in a paper.
It was an ad in a telephony magazine that he saw the Germantown telephone company was for sale, and he bought it.
And this was what year?
1928. And he packed the kids, three children.
How old were they? They were little.
Oh, they were very little. Probably 4 and 5, 6 years old.
Wow.
Packed them in a Hutmobile. My father always told me it was a Hutmobile.
Which I don't even know what that
is. I don't even know what that is either. And drove them.
Somebody Google it and call in.
And drove them cross country and settled in Germantown, took over the Germantown Telephone Company, which was a kind of a fledgling company at the time. And lived through the Depression, made it through the Depression. And it was in the family up until 2 years ago when we finally sold the company. But from 1928 to like I said, 2 years ago, it was in the family. My father, grandfather ran the company. My father ran the company. I was general manager.
Yeah. So you're Germantown through and through.
Germantown, born and bred.
So it became obviously important when you saw this collection of negatives. That's mostly Columbia, but there's some green.
Mostly Columbia. Some green, Northern Dutchess.
So just that general area. And you, how did you hear about the collection of negatives? How did that come about?
Well, I'll have to back up a little bit maybe in that. My love for photography. I was in college, decided to take a year off, but my draft number, because December 1st, 1969, there was a universal draft.
And you were in college.
And I was in college, and my draft number was 118, which was pretty low. But I decided to take a year off and roll the dice and see if I could kind of sidestep the draft.
You did? Dad!
Well, not sidestep. I mean, I was trying to be lucky and not be drafted, but yep. I was drafted. I was drafted in 1970 in the winter of 70. So instead of going in the Army, I decided to go in the Navy. So I enlisted for 4 years in the Navy.
Which also your father, my grandfather, yeah, my as well as
yeah, my father, and my uncle were all in the Navy. So it was kind of following his footsteps.
So you end up in the Navy. But you were not a photographer before that.
No, but I always wanted to learn I always wanted to learn about the darkroom. I always wanted to be involved. So just as chance would have it, my second year in the Navy, they were taking a new flagship to the Middle East, to Bahrain, and they wanted an all-volunteer crew. So my hand went in the air because I said, join the Navy and see the world. And I was sitting in Norfolk, Virginia, which wasn't very exciting. So I decided to volunteer for the ship, and we left from Portsmouth, Virginia in 1972, and we went to Bahrain.
But they, at some point, said, we need a photographer?
The first day out, they assembled the crew and gave us our orders for the day. And one of the things they requested was there anybody with darkroom experience?
You didn't.
No, I did not. With darkroom experience that wanted to be ship's photographer. And I was an electrician's mate. So I'd have to do both jobs, but I said I could handle that. And my hand shot in the air because I really wanted to be in a darkroom. And one other person also raised their hand. Luckily, this friend had experience, so
you were both allowed to do it.
We both did it
because remember, no Google.
no Google, no internet. So we both did it together, and so that's how I started my photography experience in the Navy.
You did have an interest in it prior.
I did.
Yeah,
I did. But so I was ship photographer for that year and a half.
So what year are we talking?
1972, 1973. So when I got home in 1974, after I was discharged, I put my own darkroom in at home and kept on with black and white photography. And then 1978, when Howard died, I knew of his extensive work. I didn't know the extent of it, which was a surprise to me once I did delve into the amount of work that he had done over the course of his years.
Well, and let's go back for a second, too, because you... Were you photographed by him? Are there photos of you? I know there's photos of other members of our family.
Well, Howard photographed everybody.
Yeah,
By hook or by crook, you were going to be photographed by Howard, whether it was Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Little League.
Well, yeah, I guess we should mention
school pictures,
yeah,
the weddings.
Yeah, we didn't go over that. It was anything from insurance company, car accident photos, to weddings, school pictures. One of the photos I posted today on Instagram was of a basketball game, which I assume is at the school.
Yeah.
So literally everything.
Everything. He did a lot of work for insurance companies.
He was just the guy.
He was the guy. And he did a lot of work for the newspapers. He was kind of a freelancer for the newspapers. So, yes, basketball games, school pictures. He usually took the pictures for the yearbooks. So I've got all those negatives.
From all of Columbia County and a little bit of others. And also, yep. If anybody knows photo, we should point out, they're all 4x5 negatives.
Oh, yeah, they're in great shape. And Howard was very meticulous about labeling every one of the packets with the negatives.
Which is incredible.
Which contains the negatives. So the library is just...
On a typewriter.
On a typewriter. Yeah, very legible. And by date and by category. And just an amazing collection. Tens of thousands of negatives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you weren't aware of the extent of the collection when you purchased it.
No.
Did you even see it?
No, not until I went up. And I talked to Robert and I talked to Donald, his sons. Like I said before, they liked the idea of me keeping it local. So we came to terms
and
together. So I bought the collection. And it wasn't until I walked into his dark room and his storeroom that I saw the extent of the collection. And
like,
I
almost, oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no. What what have I done?
And this was 1978.
78. And I didn't know where to store it. That was my big problem. Where am I going to put all this? And so it's been moved countless times since 1978. But I have it under control now pretty much at home. In a barn, in a shop. But, yeah, it was...
Not in a barn. They are well taken care of. They're not in a barn.
It's not in a barn. It's in a shop.
Yes.
But it's... yeah, it was quite a shock at the time. But it's... And at the time, it was no internet. So there was no homepage. No,
well, I guess
no
I was going to go back to that as well. Because at the time, not having internet, you know, what were your... Other than keeping them together and keeping them local... What did you think the intention was? What did you were you just picturing yourself as safeguarding them, or did you have, you know, an idea of what you wanted to do with them?
Well, number one was to safeguard the collection. Number two was I did have experience, again, going back to the Navy, where being a ship's photographer, we put together a cruise book. So I had experience in putting a book together with photography, and we had a cruise book. It took every stop that we had over the year and a half was included in this cruise book. So I was involved with that. From
so you
the
had
start.
You had experience so, with editing and making
yes,
a collection.
Yeah.
And...
So that was my intent, was maybe to make a book, take the best of Howard Gibson and make it into a book. So I started to use, I started with, you know, my dark room and the 4x5 negatives and producing prints and kind of compiling what I thought would be the best of Howard Gibson's collection. And slowly but surely, the internet came along and kind of took form. And a flatbed scanner and all the technology. And that's what I'm using today as a flatbed scanner and putting them into the website.
And now over the course of, you know, the years, people have come to you and asked to use them. So they've been an archive for people who are doing historical books or have they been in, I feel like you had, you know, somebody had prints made at one point for some sort of display.
Yeah, we've got a lot of requests from towns to use the negatives for town displays, for centennial celebrations. Diamond Street, I don't know if you're familiar with that book about Hudson.
I do remember that.
Howard's pictures are in Diamond Street because
look that one up. That's an interesting one we're not going to get into, but you should go look up that book.
Yeah, so Howard's pictures are in Diamond Street. But yes, I've had a lot of requests over the years for pictures from towns, from old parades and Memorial Day parades, which I have a slew of Memorial Day parade pictures.
So it is just an incredible archive for local people to dive into. I mean, even people, you know, people just enjoy looking at it, they can see their own history, their own family. You know, even, you know, you can find a street that you live on from 1950 something or other. But the other question that I had was, the vast majority of the images are, he was paid to do, it was his job. But did you come across anything that you would consider personal work? Was he doing this? Do you believe he saw this as his day job? Like he was, you know, this was he was a skilled laborer essentially, and this was his day job? Or have you come across anything that would seem like a passion project? Are there landscapes? Is there anything like that?
You know, I haven't, but I will say this, that I think a lot of his pictures, not a lot, but there are, I will say a lot, there are a lot. He had a lot of feeling for the pictures. He was a good photographer, and there were pictures of a few come to mind. There was a fire in Hudson, and he had a picture of a woman, a man with his arm around his, obviously his wife, and it was from their back, and it just spoke highly of Howard and how he felt about things and the pictures that he took. I mean, you could tell that these people were devastated. You could see the fire, you could see the result, you could see them. And there are many, many pictures like that that go above and beyond just shooting for the sake of putting a picture in the newspaper.
Document.
Pictures of, and the ones I really have come to love are the pictures of the old fruit stands, with the parents, the grandparents, and the children standing beside these fruit stands throughout Columbia County back in the 50s, and the work involved, and the look of the people, and just the feel of it, the Americana aspect of many, many of Howard's pictures just is what I'm trying to bring home in this website, is to share those with the public, because it was just more than just shooting for Howard. Like I said, there was a warmth to a lot of these pictures that really come out when you take a deep dive and look at them. And it's pretty impressive.
Well, it's a very interesting thing, myself as a photographer, and you've been a photographer as well, is that when you're documenting things that are happening now, a lot of people don't realize that they're interesting. So maybe you pass by it and you don't take a picture of Mr. So-and-so at the fruit stand because you see him every day. So it's not interesting. So to have the forethought to take that picture, knowing that at some point in the future, it's going to be an interesting, you know, slice of life that might not seem interesting now, but it will be interesting in the future. It's just incredible that we have that catalog of a very specific area photographed for decades, you know, every slice of life, every aspect of life he captured, whether he was paid to do it or not, doesn't really matter. Like you said, I mean, he's still framing a good picture. He's still capturing, you know, that moment in time. And now because of you, because of his sons, because of you, it's going to last for a while. And hundreds, I don't know how many people have seen it. I always find it interesting. I'll recommend the website to people and they already know about it.
You know, one of the things that people were forced to do in years past was to take pictures of bar rooms. If they had to get a liquor license, they had to send pictures to the state to get their liquor license. So from 1947 on, Howard took mostly all the pictures of the old bar rooms, and it's like one heck of a collection of old bar rooms, and they're slowly fading. I mean, a lot of the bar rooms have been taken over by other businesses, and it's just a salute to days gone by, and that's quite a collection. And I've tried to categorize and catalog and all the different aspects of Howard's photography on the site by putting them in different categories, and one of them is bars and grills, which is kind of a nice collection.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting too, that you're not talking about one or two photos of a certain subject. You have hundreds. You know, the ones that you were showing me the other day were chauffeur licenses.
Yes.
So explain to me it's not a chauffeur like I'm thinking.
No.
Anybody who drove a commercial vehicle?
Yes. Anybody that drove a commercial vehicle had to have a chauffeur's license. So it's almost like a passport shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a neck and head and shoulders.
But it wasn't. I mean, some of the ones you showed me, I mean, it was almost their whole body, you know, three-quarter picture.
So you get
to see their clothes. You get to see their face.
And, you know, growing up in Germantown, you get to see and remember who they were.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
and they all have names on them.
Anybody,
so you know exactly who it is.
Yeah, anybody out there that's grown up in a small town, Germantown's no different than any other. I mean, you knew people, you knew their parents, you knew their grandparents, mm-hmm. Aunts and uncles, you knew all their relatives. So it's kind of fun to look back and see pictures of the people that you grew up with. And Howard had an elaborate collection. But there are other things like soapbox derby. I mean, mm-hmm. you just don't see those things today. And just the different aspects of the towns and stock car races. The old stock car race pictures are classics. And they were done mostly after the people got out of the war. And a lot of the men started racing cars. And there were some real good stock car tracks in Columbia County. And he's got an extensive library of pictures of stock cars.
Crazy.
Which is neat. Yeah, Memorial Day pictures, extensive collection of those.
Yeah, which I particularly love some of those because it's Main Street in Germantown.
Yeah.
And you're like, that building is still there with the same siding.
Yeah. Hudson parades, Tivoli parades, Germantown.
I mean, they look
parades.
Almost exactly the same. You can only tell by the cars that are on the street.
And you mentioned early basketball games mm-hmm. and school pictures, extensive library with different basketball games, you know, playing schools that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So do you remember, I mean, if he died in 1978, do you remember him? Do you remember seeing him around?
Oh, yeah. Donald, like I said, was in my class. So
that's the son.
The son. I knew Donald very well. And Howard was always around. He was very involved with the youth projects, whether it was swimming program that we had in Germantown, whether it was the Little League.
Where would you swim?
Dale's Bridge.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
They had, like, swimming lessons there?
Oh, swimming lessons, lifeguard lessons.
In the row gym.
Life-saving lessons in the row gym.
Life-saving. Was it a lesson or was somebody's life being saved?
Well, that's where we had swimming lessons.
Oh,
we didn't have a lake, so settled.
I'd rather swim in the creek, I guess.
We settled for Dale's Bridge. but he was very involved. Everybody knew Howard. I was young, obviously, but friends with my parents. He was very involved with Lions Club. Which my parents were, my father, my uncle, and grandfather. So Howard was very involved with Lions Club. So everyone knew Howard.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting now. And now you own the collection. So let's go back to the website for a second. You started, when did you start the website? Also, if anybody wants to visit it, it's photo, not photos,
photo,
photo
by Gibson.
By Gibson.com.
Right.
And when did you start? Because you really started in full, what, when you retired?
Yeah, I think so. Probably 2013, 2014.
Oh, wow. You were not retired then,
were you? Semi-retired.
You kept going back.
It started slowly, but I started building it up and, winter projects, so we didn't mm-hmm. do too much in the summer, obviously, but just a winter project and dabbling with it and with your help.
I don't know if I helped much. I think I bought you a book once about scanning.
Well, yeah, but it was not as only scanning, but how do I organize this?
Yeah.
And
what size sometimes, what resolution?
Yeah, yeah.
See, but when I went to school for photo, it was still all darkroom as well. So I also didn't know anything about scanning or digital anything. Yeah.
No,
I feel like together there was some Googling occasionally about, wait, what's a resolution again?
I learned a lot by trial and error.
Yep.
But how to put them in collections was tricky. There were so many, and there still are more. I mean, my work isn't done.
Well, I was going to say, so you said there's thousands.
Yeah, I got a long way to go.
How do you, what percentage do you think you've?
Well, I say I got a long way to go. I might be two-thirds, maybe two-thirds.
That's pretty...
pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you pick? Are you just picked them based on what you're interested in?
Well...
you're like, well, those old sidewalk pictures because somebody tripped on the sidewalk, that's not that interesting.
Exactly. So I go through the envelopes and I look at what's typed on the envelopes to determine exactly what the category might be.
Well, wait. Which one did... What did you do first? What was the first box that you were like, yes,
I can't
wait.
The oldest.
The oldest.
Yeah, I started with the oldest and worked
which
up.
Which was...
I started with Belrose, which was back in 1936.
Wow.
So I wanted to do his Belrose pictures.
What's Belrose?
That's where he lived before he moved to Germantown.
Oh, in Long Island.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he was a photographer in Belrose.
Well, that's interesting that you started with that, though, because then, I mean, you wouldn't recognize anything, but you were interested in the fact of how old it was.
Well, how old it was, and then I kind of cut my teeth on, you know, like you said, how to enlarge them, how to crop them,
how to save them.
How to save them. So I thought I'd start with those first and work my way forward. So I got through 1978, but a lot of accident pictures. And his son, Robert, wrote to me early on and asked me, please don't post any accident pictures,
yes,
because he said he certainly didn't want to upset the families. And I totally agreed with that. So yeah, I haven't posted any accident pictures and won't. The other ones are assignments. He termed them assignments, which was work for the insurance companies. And I've been going through those, but there aren't a lot in there. But I'm going to go through all those, and those are pretty much what's left.
Yeah.
Assignments.
And what do you? What is that? What do you? What are they mostly of?
Like you just said, maybe some steps that were icy. Yeah. You know, accident pictures, slip and fall pictures that they needed photography work done. But there are other ones in there too that might be good to look at. Some aerial photographs that he took for realtors. He went up in planes.
Again, no drones.
No.
Is he like hanging out of a plane?
You can see the wing and. But I've got some good pictures of the old Rip Van Winkle Bridge and access to the bridge that he took from. He took a lot of aerial pictures, and a lot of the aerial ones are back in the 40s, which are kind of nice. So they reflect kind of what the area looked like.
I was going to say when was the Rip Van Winkle made? Charlie, my son reads the sign all the time, and I can't remember.
35,
I feel like.
Yeah, 35, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Or so that was already there when he showed up.
Yeah.
So you think you've done two-thirds.
I'm guessing.
You keep plugging along.
Plugging along.
But yeah, I was going to go back to, you said you started it, you think, 2013. Now, there's no social media for the, you know, you don't have an Instagram, you don't have a Facebook, there's no newsletter, but somehow, I mean, everybody knows about the website. Just word of mouth. I mean, it just started gaining. And then, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a staple, especially for people who love history. There's been plenty of people that I've said, hey, you know, my dad has this website and you should check it out. And they're like, oh, yeah, please. I already know that.
Yeah, I think the word of mouth comes because of town historians.
Yes.
And then people might ask a town historian, where can I get a picture of this? And they've directed people to me. And so it's been good. And I've enjoyed doing that for people. No charge. I've never charged anybody.
Yeah, it's an incredible
anything.
Service.
So I won't. I mean, Howard took these pictures, I feel, to share with the community. And if I can assist a town or a community in whatever endeavor they may have, and a celebration or fundraiser, whatever it may be, they can use anything off the site. As far as I'm concerned, it's theirs.
Yeah.
Free gratis.
That's great. So as you said, when you first got them, you had this idea for a book in mind, but then the internet came. And so now you have this fantastic website. So are you happy with where they are? Or do you think that at some point you would still like to put a book together?
I don't think so. I'm happy where it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I don't want to get too big. But and I may have to take some of the collections and break them apart, you know, if they do get too big. But it's worked out very well. You know, categories like individuals and families, that's a tough one because he took a lot of pictures of families for Christmas pictures. And,
oh,
you know, so I've got
interesting.
A ton of those pictures. But it's really nice to look back and see what families looked like and what was under the tree for Christmas in 1956. And
their level of tinsel.
Yeah, huge amounts of tinsel.
lots of tinsel.
But those kind of things that New York State troopers. I mean, he took a lot of pictures for the troopers to look back and see what the troopers, the uniforms.
What was that, some sort of license or?
No, I don't know. He took pictures, like if somebody got promoted, he'd take pictures of the promotion and to look back and see what the cars look like and what the uniforms look like. And there's just a ton of different things. The wedding pictures are interesting to go back again and see what people wore and what they look like and how weddings have changed between then and now.
Well, so even within his own collection, you have decades and you can see the changes,
yeah,
even in his own images,
yeah,
versus now.
So, will it change? It may change some, depending upon, like I said, how many go into each collection and whether there may be new collections.
Yeah. So, you know, it having the website and having people have this access, constant access to it, which is such a fantastic thing. How much longer do you think it'll take?
Good question. Depends upon how much time I want to devote to it.
Have you ever skipped some time? You're like, I'm done with this.
I wouldn't say I'm done with this, but I've taken breaks.
If anybody's scanned negatives before, I just can't believe you've gotten as far as you have.
Yeah, I've got like
it's so tedious.
7 or 8,000 negatives out there. It is tedious
and
work.
And prints.
But it's.
And wait, you said you made prints early on.
But
those prints you showed me are not yours. Those came from him?
A lot of them did. Some came from me when I had my dark room, and I just started with his negatives producing prints. But yeah, it's a winner. It's a winner project for sure, and depends how bad the winner is.
Yes, can I go outside? I'd rather be outside.
I'd rather be here scanning negatives. But it is a tedious process. It's one at a time.
Yes,
and it's
and dusting.
And talking of tedious process, I'm just amazed, and you know yourself how long it takes to develop film.
Yes.
To sit and develop film, wait for it to dry, make sure they do it correctly, and then to print the pictures from the film. Howard must have spent his entire life in that darkroom.
Yes, his smelling entire life. Fixer.
And I have to imagine his wife Florence probably typed up probably those envelopes.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think of that.
I would think so.
Because that's one of the things I found the most impressive is that things like that can get over top of you very quickly.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you're behind and then you're like, it's fine, whatever. I'll remember who that guy was.
Nope.
But yes, every single one has a name, a date, a place, an address. Yep. It's crazy, but you're right. That's a good point. I bet he didn't do it.
No, from 1947 right through to 78 when he died, they were all the same. I mean, all the information was typed. There was never anything just quickly handwritten.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of time and he took care in making sure that all the information was concise and to the point.
Yeah.
And dated. And can't thank you enough, Howie, because you made my life easy.
Yeah, that's great. So he, like you said, he photographed everything. Have you ever, I mean, you recognize most of the things in Germantown, but he was throughout Columbia County. I mean, it'd be really interesting to go see how much of whatever it was that he photographed still looks the same. That's something that I would definitely find. I know Germantown does. Most of Germantown still looks the same.
Well, that's kind of what I'm looking for with the assignment pictures. And that's what I'm saying. Oh. The other third or however many there are, I'm guessing at a third, is at the intersections and so on of communities. Because a lot of these, even though they were accidents,
mm-hmm.
he still took pictures of roadways because whether they were dry or wet,
okay.
and it really didn't take a picture of the cars in the accident, but the roadways.
Interesting.
So a lot of times I'll come by pictures that just have pictures of maybe Main Street Catskill from 1947. So I'm on the lookout for those, which don't reflect an accident. Nobody's going to have their feelings hurt because...
Yeah, but it's just the intersection.
Intersection. So that's kind of what I'm looking for now.
That's interesting.
Is more to, like you said, to go back and see a then and now picture.
Yeah. So now with your photography, so this is kind of, is this scratching the itch for photo? Or do you yourself have any interest in going out and taking your own pictures inspired by Howie?
You know, I haven't. It's kind of taken a back seat totally to this project because I've kind of thrown myself at this. And I get the satisfaction almost of being in the dark room
mm-hmm.
because I have to develop these things on a flatbed scanner, put them in the computer, crop them, lighten, darken them, Photoshop them. So it's almost like working in a dark room.
It's not
your own work, but it's certainly a product that you're enhancing.
Yes.
As you would if you took the photo yourself.
Especially because you can get an idea of what the image is from the negative, but the minute you scan it, you know, you get the real image.
But with a 4x5 negative, if you look at it, you pretty much know what you're getting.
No, but it's still a negative for people out there that don't understand.
It's a reverse picture.
Yes, it's an inverse. So you see it, you know exactly what it is. But the minute you scan it and you then all of a sudden get all of those beautiful gray tones. Yeah. And, I mean, he knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every single image has the full gambit of tones.
Yes.
You know, they're really incredible. And then when you think about the fact that they are 4x5s, which I took a 4x5 class in college, it was required or I probably wouldn't have. I mean, it's a bummer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he wasn't using the hole with the bellows and whatever, but he had like a, you know, a small.
Well, there's a good picture on the site. The introduction on the site is a picture of Howard holding his camera.
Yes.
Holding that 4x5 camera.
Yeah.
So you can see just the size of the camera, like you said.
I mean, when I say 4x5, I forget that people don't know what that means. That's 4 inches by 5 inches.
Yeah,
that's what a 4x5 is for anybody that doesn't know.
It's not a 35. It's not 35 millimeters.
And I don't think there were any 35 millimeters. Were there?
Negatives?
Yeah.
Very few.
Very few.
Very, very few.
And all the way up through the 70s,
yeah,
he's shooting these giant 4x5 negatives.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 4 inches by 5 inches for anybody that doesn't know. A film negative. I mean, it's impressive.
Very impressive.
So just think about the fact that the 4x5 negative, 4 inches by 5 inches, fits inside the camera. So the camera is that much bigger, this giant thing you're lugging around.
And heavier.
And most people don't even bother to take their phone out of their pocket to take a picture. Yep. And this guy's got this giant thing photographing literally everything.
It's really a godsend that it's pre-digital.
Yes.
In a way, because you're never going to have this again.
No.
You're never going to see this, the extent of, like you just said, with the black and white pictures to that extent on those negatives, you're never going to capture that again.
No. And a 4x5 negative, albeit, you know, cumbersome and annoying, they're just magic, because the clarity that you capture on a 4x5 negative is just unmatched, even with digital.
Yep.
You know, like I said, I went to school and I was shooting film, and now I shoot, you know, 99.9% of what I shoot is digital, because it's far easier and cheaper, but they're just not the same.
Well,
you know, the tones that you can get, even when you scan them, you can still, you can still see them all, but a negative print in the darkroom on a beautiful piece of fiber paper is unmatched.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see myself doing this for a number more years, and then I have to turn it over to somebody else.
Oh, who might
maybe somebody who's got photographic experience.
Did I reiterate that I hate scanning things? You'll have to buy me a new scanner.
Can become habit forming.
Yeah. No, obviously, I mean, I love the idea of you having it and having the forethought to buy it. Because as you know, you're my dad. I love history. So, yeah, I mean, just the fact I feel like I'm, especially in our family, some sort of, you know, keeper of family heirloom kind of things. So to have that archive, yeah, is just an incredible thing, and somebody should be the keeper of it. But also, they are negatives and they need to be kept in a certain way. So I know that you haven't dealt with anything about, you know, where they end up at a certain point, but that is a conversation, you know, that has to happen at some point so that they can be kept, you know, humidity controlled and this and that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind parsing out some of them. I've got a huge collection of St. Mary's Academy pictures, the old St. Mary's School in Hudson. Catholic school.
Yes.
It's no more.
Yeah.
But St. Mary's Church is still there.
Oh.
So I'm trying to find some inroads and talk to some people at the St. Mary's Church if they'd be interested in taking this collection, because it's extensive.
Why do you think, why is it just all the school pictures?
Yeah, school pictures, all the grades, all the years, and just something I probably wouldn't replicate. And it'd be better to get it in their hands than it would be to keep it in mine.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, Germantown school pictures. I mean, you know, once I go through those, it'd be nice to hand those off to the school if they had a place to store them, if there's ever going to be a use. I just hate to see them be put in a closet somewhere.
Yes, exactly. And end up in a yard sale.
And never see the light of day again.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now they're in a controlled environment where I keep it warm, relatively warm in the winter, and try to keep it as cool as possible in the summer. They can freeze and mm-hmm. crack,
yeah,
as you know. So that's something I'd be very careful about. But it's so far it's been going well, and like I said, I got more work ahead of me, and we'll just keep plugging along.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible asset. It's one thing to have the negatives, but then the amount of work that you've done to digitize the archive, I mean, it's just such an incredible thing, and doesn't make it a quote, a selling point financially, but it makes yeah. it, to a group, if they were willing to take it on, you've already done the legwork.
I have. whether eventually a history department or the county might take it on, and
the state
might assume the collection. It'd be nice. I'd feel good about that. But again, to keep it intact and to have people utilize it in the way it should be utilized.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that, I mean, the internet's fantastic, but personally, I would love to see a nice big book at some point. Maybe that's where I take it.
There you go.
I'll let you do all the grunt work, digitize them all, and then I'll just pick and choose.
You pick out the best.
It's sad to me that photos are now, I mean, on the website, photobygibson.com, you can enlarge them. But the vast majority of images that people see nowadays are these teeny little, on Instagram on their phone.
Right.
And you really need to be able to dive into a photo. You really need to be able to read a photo, see all of those minute little details that he got, the lettering on a sign on the fruit stand,
yep.
All of those things, because they weren't going to a sign maker.
No.
Somebody in that family hand-painted the signs.
Where it says free picnic tables.
Yeah, there you go. And you really need to be able to dive in and see all of that stuff. So, I really still feel like a book is something that has to happen at some point.
Well, it may happen.
It may happen.
There's certainly enough negatives there to yeah. come up with a book.
It would be an extensive book,
but.
So tell us, we have a couple minutes left. Anything else that you found that really fascinated you? We talked about the farm stands. I loved the chauffeur's licenses. And anything else the school photos, obviously, because, classmates and things like that, people you recognize, is there anything else that you've found really fascinating that he would photograph?
A lot of pictures of the county fairs, which are good too.
How much have they changed?
They've changed a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
It's still just a kid with a cow.
Well, there's kid with cows, but there's also other things and little aspects that you wouldn't think about that you could pick up on.
Yeah.
Again, but
I mean, clothing,
kind of the then and now clothing, mm-hmm. and just the whole tenor of life back then and life the way it is now. And if you look through the whole library and you look through the whole website, you pick up on that. things have changed from mid-century to today. The 50s, the 60s that Howard captured in his pictures. And it's not maybe just one picture, but it's the accumulation of all the pictures and life like it was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of comes down to a kind of an Americana, upstate New York Americana.
Yes,
and
for
it's,
sure.
And it screams off the page at times. And you can't really put it in writing sometimes, but you just sense that it's different.
Yeah.
And it, in a lot of ways, it really shows itself.
Yeah. For me, because my, specialty in photography is portrait photography. So I always find, like I said, the clothing, the looks on their faces, all of those things are the most fascinating. I also find it interesting the ages of people. Sometimes when you're like, who's that old man? That old man is younger than me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they lived a much harder life.
Yeah.
yeah, those things I find really fascinating. And the other thing too is when you're having your picture taken with a 4x5, you got to stand still.
Pretty
much. I mean, that's the other thing. I always wonder, like, are those people sad or they just had to stand for 2 seconds?
I think we talked earlier about the Memorial Day parade pictures.
But yes.
Those are classics.
Yeah.
With the number of men and women in the parade in the Legion, particularly, you know, after the war, and how it's parsed down to so few today.
That's true.
It's quite a change.
I feel like there was one image and there was a baton.
Baton twirler.
There's none of that now.
No. And the school band. I mean,
you get excited when there's a horse in the parade.
Yeah.
Forget a baton person.
Yeah, they had baton twirlers. The band was the Germantown.
I mean, it was a parade.
The Germantown school band was a big band. And it's a shell of itself, what it used to be today. But it's, times have changed.
Yeah, it's for sure like iconic Americana.
It is.
I mean, through and through, from the cars on the street, the clothes that people are wearing, baton people. Where do you find a baton person?
Yeah, show me a baton twirler.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to, we have a couple minutes left. What else do you think we didn't go over here?
I think we covered quite a bit. I just want to thank you for having me in.
No, thank you for showing up on the 4th of July at the last minute. I don't know why I didn't think of it. Again, maybe you're too famous and you couldn't, you couldn't be on legendary.
Not famous at all.
What was I going to say here? I completely lost my train of thought because I'm just so thankful that you're here.
No, if anybody has any questions, there's a contact me on the site.
Yes.
Which they can email me directly.
But again, no Instagram or anything like that. And it's photo.
Photo by Gibson.com.
Photo by Gibson.com. Gibson, G-I-B-S-O-N. And you're going to fall down a hole once you get to it. I mean, there's just, you can be in there looking at every single picture for quite a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic. And as you said, you don't mind that if people share them.
No, share them.
Please
use them.
At least give Howie
credit.
It's not about your.
No.
It's not about your website.
Nope.
It's not about anything like that. But just give Howie Gibson.
No,
nope,
I didn't take the pictures. They're Howie's. So please.
But give him credit.
Give him the credit, please.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. I mean, I just love that. It's like, you know, for the people to use and enjoy.
Yeah. Howie took the pictures and, they should be there for people to utilize and to enjoy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And again, if anybody wants to take it on, where they take a photo that Howie took now, that would be awesome. I want to see somebody else do that. I don't have time for that. But if anybody wants to do that, that would be so cool.
And feel free to download anything from the site that suits your needs.
Yep, just with credit.
With
we love credit.
Please.
Give credit where credit's due. Three more minutes. Anything else you want to add here?
Can't think of anything else. There are some old pictures I have. More pictures from that he took down around New York City.
Oh.
Yeah, that I haven't kind of delved into yet. So I'm going to
What do you think? What was that for? Assignments again?
It might have been assignments.
Wait, did he take pictures of his own family? I mean, I saw a photo of him and his wife.
There's pictures of Robert and Donald when they were younger.
So I guess that would be personal work.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Snapshots.
Yep. Yeah, he took pictures of, you know, when they had New Year's Eve parties. There were some New Year's
Eve. His own parties?
His own parties. Yep.
Were they in focus?
Yeah.
That was my first thought.
It must have been early on.
Yeah. It was early in the evening.
No, he took Christmas pictures of himself and Florence.
I've seen some of those. I'm
boys.
Obsessed. Because, again, the level of tinsel is just unreal.
Yeah.
People don't use tinsel like they used to.
Yeah. Some of the pictures from Belrose, which are posted on the site, Belrose.
And that's Long Island again.
B-E-L-L-R-O-S-E on Long Island. Those are good pictures, and those are back in the earliest is 1936.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great negatives, and just pictures of old stores and just different intersections from Belrose, from where he lived. But those are good pictures. Old campsites, which you don't see anymore. So that's a good series, the Belrose Pictures.
And those are on the website? I'm not sure I looked through those.
Yep, those are on the website.
Interesting. Yep. Oh, that's fantastic. I wish I knew how he started taking pictures.
I don't know how he got
started. It just seemed that was his job.
I don't know how he got started. Yeah. I really don't. But the earliest picture that showed up was 1936.
Crazy.
Yep.
So how old would he have been then?
I really don't know how old he was when he died, actually. I could find out.
But if he had a son in your...
Yeah, I think when he moved here, I was born in 1949, so Donald was born in 49. So he moved here in, when did I say? He moved here in 70. When did he move here?
Oh, we're going to get cut off here.
Okay.
But anyway, thank you so much,
Well, you're
Dad.
Very welcome. Well, thank
Photo
you, Lucy.
Photobygibson.com. I really...